My name is Lila, and I'm an alcoholic. It always takes a few moments for my dad to show up. I've gotten used to it. Silence doesn't bother me anymore, so I hope it doesn't bother you. Thanks, Jan. I want to thank Tim, for being so kind. When I talked to Tim on the phone, I really didn't want to put another convention on my calendar. But he has a gentleness about him. I'm sure you didn't in Santa Barbara. No. He's been very, very kind in a quiet way this weekend while I've been here. And my friend Robin was gracious enough to call not too long ago, and there was my opportunity again in the midst of a lot of problems in my life to say, no, I just do not have the strength. But for some reason, I didn't say that. And I thought if all else fails, well, I'll just drive down on Sunday morning, and I don't actually bother with the whole weekend. Because you see, a lot has happened in a week, and that's life, and that's what sobriety is. It's about life. Sometimes it's like the ocean, you know, the waves are bigger than usual. Just recently, my love Jane said to me, in a book she was reading about these random waves, and they call them crazy spontaneous waves. They just come from all directions. And she said that they're so big in the ocean that they can take the portholes, steel windows, right off an ocean liner. And I thought, oh my God, I'm afraid of water as it is, you know. And, but little did I know that it would parallel my life. She also told me that the most dangerous job in the world, we talked about this morning, was commercial fishing. Can you imagine? I thought those guys were just out there getting a tan and getting all poor unfortunate fish and flopping them around in ice buckets and delivering them fresh in every restaurant in Santa Barbara. But apparently not. And so life is everywhere. And, I came here on Sunday, last Friday, and I didn't really have a good attitude, really, to tell you the truth. I came because I was desperate to get away. I needed to rest. I was not physically doing very well. I had a lot of things happen from Sunday to Sunday, and I noticed a few negative things, you know. When you're tired and you're not in balance, I don't know what happens to you, but what happens to me is I do not see through the eyes of God, but I see through the eyes of myself. And what I sometimes see is unprotected, and it's fearful. But a little thing began to happen, and I have come to believe that I need glasses now that I'm 50. I mean, why wear a watch that matches your outfit if you can't see the hand? I thought I was humble enough to be over that bullshit, obviously. So don't worry, Tim, I now know what time it is. I'll end in an hour. But the little miracles began to happen that restored me. You see, I believe in miracles. I've believed in miracles for the last 27 plus years of my sobriety, and I expect them. And I believe that if I show up, if I just do the next indicated thing, then that's what's going to happen to me, that I will be healed, that I will be healed. And no matter how much is going on in my life, and believe me, I was surprised myself, no matter how much is going on, I will be healed. And the healing will begin in the most subtle and kind and outside ways until I too, then, through the use of people and through the events of miracles, will begin to open me up inside, and that great reality will again fill me up, and I will be able to breathe my God, breathe my God, breathe my God. Because when I get fearful and too much happens and I don't sleep and the pain comes back in my heart, then I can assure you that I do not breathe my God, and I forget, and I forget. And I don't care how long this is over. There are days when you may forget. But the great thing about the consistency and the habit of sobriety, I mean, I hope your habit of sobriety is as dedicated as the habit of drinking, because you'll be safe then. And the habit of my sobriety is that if I can just stay going, if I can keep going, everything will be all right. And And we pulled into the parking place, and Tim had arranged the room that we had requested, and it was really nice because I had come to the Miramar to heal myself before, and I was in the same place, and that we live in an environment at home, you know, which is really like a resort, and we can hear the water and everything. That's not like at the Miramar. I mean, it pounds on that surf, and it just washes your soul, and you're you know, I don't know what happens to you when you hear that water pound, but for me, it's a cleansing. And I got out of the car, and we were taking the things into the room. And one of the little vehicles, you know, with the guy in it, a bunch of little baskets came by, and there was a young woman, and her name was Dana, you know, the unsung heroes at these conventions, you know. And she had all these baskets, and I heard her say that, you know, that goes to that room, and it's for Ryan, and I smiled to myself, and I was in one of those moods, you know, where you didn't want to talk to anybody. I thought, Christ, I haven't even closed the car door, and it's upon me to be on, you know. And I sort of stood against the car for a moment, and I looked at her. And I have a habit. I have the habit of sobriety. It's in me. It's like breathing. I couldn't help myself. My body took over. My hand extended itself. And I said, hello, my name is Lila. And she said, my name is Dana. And da-da-da-da-da, and what else? And she was delightful. She was delightful. And she had that sparkle in her eyes, and I thought, oh my God, and she gave me enough strength to get up the stairs and to be grateful to be here. And then in this basket, you know, I've done these conventions, and I must tell you that you get all kinds of interesting things. A lot of it's just stuff you've never used in your whole life. And, you know, the kind of stuff you find in apartments of people that are about 102 and sort of things. And I looked at this basket, and it was very interesting, and it had purple paper and little string and thing, and I thought, gee, it's kind of interesting. And a lovely little card and a tiny envelope with all these little seashells, and it said, we absolutely insist on you enjoying yourself. And I thought, how kind and how nice, because no matter how many people are made up in the world of AA, and there are those people here right in this room today born negative. I saw some of them this weekend, and, you know, but there's more people that are not, you know what I mean? There's more people that are not, and it's my choice as to where I look, and it is my will that will allow me to submit that decision. As long as I use that will to make room for God, then I'll see the little seashells, and I'll see the cards, and I'll know that it was written with love. And then I looked again in a little cup, and in the cup there were little pencils and a little book, you know, something you could actually write with, and it was wonderful. And in fact, I did take that little book, and I wrote down some of the little things that this young girl had. I said to her, did you do all these baskets and that insulation? And she said, oh, yes. And let me tell you what she had in here. It was wonderful. In my basket, now I don't know about the other people's baskets, but I'm just assuming mine was special. This little tiny big book keeps falling. Do you think that means anything? I'm a spiritual speaker after all. I should have figured that. I have to wait the whole weekend. The only good thing is I didn't get one of those little flags, so nobody knew it was me, and I was delighted. Okay, I had a big yellow rubber raft in my basket. I mean, one of those things that's like 8 feet long, and you can blow it up and float around in the water. It was absolutely delightful. It was delightful. And trail mix and some wonderful coffee, you know, ground coffee, and a back scratcher. And these little millions of little shells, and actually a tiny little starfish, and a little notepaper, and a thousand other little things, and a little sofa in the shape of the sun. And I thought, how gracious, how loving, how kind, how considerate she was to think of each and every one of these things, all of which put together a welcome that really heals me. And I forgot the most important thing of all, earplugs. Look, so tiny earplugs. It was marvelous, 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 you know. Not that you need them here, because of this young girl's tiny healing, every time that train came by, why, I rushed to the door and flung it open to see it. You know, she was able to restore me, to be able to have a little bit of fun, to become a child again. It was wonderful. It was absolutely wonderful. So in her own way, I don't know how long Dana is sober, but she exhibited more sobriety and strength and hope than I had that day. The next day, Well, I wanted to play tennis, you know, I have the rackets and all that, and they feel good on my shoulder. I like wearing the tennis shorts, and I said, well, I may not play well, but I look really good, and, you know, and Jane played quite well, and in fact, she won one of the prizes or something. And I went out with the attempt to play tennis, but I really, I was unable to, and I didn't really feel dealing with the impatience of some of the other players. So I thought, no, you know, something, I'm not really, I don't have the strength for this tennis. But it was wonderful to spend 5 or so minutes talking with Mark and to find out that he's in his first year, and here he is volunteering as the sports chairman of the event. And later on, Jane said, oh, he was great. He came out smoking a cigarette just to make sure everybody playing tennis is doing all right. I thought, wait, well, we'll have to see this guy in 20 years while he's out there, you know, being the referee with us or whatever. But, and I wandered off to the Alalan luncheon, and again, I really didn't want to go, and I didn't feel up to it, but I had the habit of sobriety, and I needed to go, and I needed to be around people even if I didn't know any of them, really. And when I walked into the room, I ran into Renee, Tim's wife, and I said, may I sit at your table? And she said, of course, and she showed me 2 seats. And then I was blessed by what is referred to in the 12 and 12 as the mature AAs. And it's got nothing to do with age or time on sobriety, but it's a sense of serenity inside and a sense of peace. And there was a lady across the table, and her name was Teresa. And we talked about Ruth in the International Convention. We did a spoke there. And we shared some of our experiences at the International Convention. And it restored me. And it brought me back to the wonder and the magic and the blessing that I felt there. I had the opportunity to participate in that convention. And it was such an honor. It was one of the honors of my life. And outside of AA, I have had many successes. But that is one of the biggest of them all. And we talked about that. And she's sending me a tape of Ruth, I believe you had her here last year, and perhaps you heard the part that she was gonged out in the International Convention. It was such a distressing thing. And Teresa healed me by her kindness and her gentleness. I ran into her 2 more times, once this morning and again yesterday. And she will not know how the language of the heart is not spoken in words, but it comes through the eyes, comes through the heart. I had the opportunity to have on my right a woman named Eve. Never saw the woman before, have no idea about her, how long she's sober, anything about her. She will not know how much she heals me. She heals me because she's gentle inside, and I could see it in her eyes. It was so that that next evening when I listened outside to the gentleman speaking last night, no mistake, that she came and she sat beside me. I needed her. I needed her beside me more than I needed anyone else. She was the perfect person to sit beside me. She healed me. She spoke the language of the heart. We did not talk. She has no idea what is going on in my life. She looked in my eyes. She understood. I did not have to explain that to her. I am gracious to share my life with a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to be standing. Who knows me, who loves me, who waits for me, who understands. This is a difficult time. It is a change in my life, a very big change. A lot has happened. Death does that. Sickness does that. Closing up all things does that. I had the opportunity in the last week to closed my mother's house after 36 years of her living there, and I walked into the bedroom where my brother died from R to B at 21 years of age, and I had to say goodbye to that room because I would never be back. And it brought it all back to me, brought it all back. I looked at the feebleness of my mother as she's moving into my building, and I had to put aside the horror of having your mother 2 inches from you. And I thought, oh my God, she's old and she's feeble and she needs me now, and I have the strength. Often Sunday to Sunday that this can happen in your life. From Sunday to Sunday. And that's just the beginning. We won't even talk about the unrecovered sober person, my sister, who is not untreated recovery. Sobriety without the habits of how to live. Stark, raving mad. At any given moment, wrote a check for $430,000 and lived 2 doors from me. Did it in a weekend. Why? Visited at home. Our sober environment, our environment shared by God and all the angels and all the love and all the people. Laid on our couch and we healed her after her operation, the surgery in the hospital, and we fed her and we lit a fire and we did all the things that we would do for anybody. and that we do for ourselves, because you learn to nurture yourself in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't, then you have manufactured the misery that it says in the book you need not do. Because healing can come from love and graciousness and kindness and nurturing to yourself just as well as pain, the old idea. We put her on our couch and we took care of her. And she felt that peace and she felt that love and she felt that giving that is natural for us. And she thought she could buy it. My brother went in on Thursday for surgery and in fact it could have been life-threatening and it was no longer life-threatening on Friday. My other brother went in and exchange counts. Perhaps he's out, perhaps he's not, I don't think so, I don't know. My nephew passed away from cancer after 6 months, he was 27 years of age. But my other brother had another baby boy and he was born. And that's life. And it all happened from Sunday to Sunday. So is time really? It's for us to measure. But I think in the new spiritual universe, it is not measured at all. And all in all, from Friday afternoon to Sunday morning, am I better? No. Am I better than I was? Absolutely. Have I had a little fun? You bet I have. Have I had some good laughs? Yes. Have I felt the kindness and the love of my friends? Phil and Linda, you drove up from Santa Monica this morning. Phil, you called my mother yesterday to find out if she was doing all right. How do you get these people in your life? April and S.K. drove over here this morning. Judy, who I've shared rooms of meetings with for 20-something years. Do we talk? Do we really know about each other's lives, Judy and I? Not at all. I'm not sure I know what she does, really. Prior to my choosing to take some time and retiring, closing that business, I'm not sure she knew what the hell I did. Has it ever affected us? Our love for one another, the wonder of seeing her this morning, can I tell you, it healed me. It healed me. So I don't know if you'll get anything at all this morning. Not really my business, the result. But I'll tell you, I have had more than I can measure. And here's the great part. I expect even more. You see, I'm an alcoholic. Just because I have stopped drinking doesn't mean that I don't want it all. I still want it all. I'm sober now. I can have it. I intend to feel as much as I possibly can. And I do not intend to wait for a golden life and a magnificent experience to befall me on my deathbed. I want it now. I want it today. I want it this minute. I want it inside. I want it now. And I can have it. And I only have to do two things. Two things. Stay sober. Stay sober means not drink. For me, it means doing nothing else. And make room for God. Well, that's all I have to do. It takes every ounce of energy that I have not to stay sober. But to make room for God. If I make room for God and I'm busy about that, I'm sober. If I make room for God and my spiritual condition is sound, I'm not going to drink. When I joined the Hole in the Ground in Huntington Park, October 1st, 1969, the 60s, you remember your convention is the 60s, I thought, great, I haven't had a clue what they were like. I mean, I can't tell you that I was conscious in the 60s at all. Not at all. And when I, October 1969, when I did become sober, believe me, I was not conscious. I was sober, but I was not conscious. I was absolutely frozen in my body, terrified of this thing called sobriety, hating the sensation of it, the imagine, the emotion of it. Never mind God. Forget spiritual balance. How about breathing? I mean, I could not turn my head. I came in with alcoholic poisoning. My leg was already beginning to drag and I was 22 years of age. I could not lose my head. I was dying. Did it matter to me? Absolutely not. They could show me all the pictures of cirrhosis and livers and everything. Who cares? because you see, I have come to understand that alcoholism is the most socially acceptable form of suicide we have in our country and in our world today. We just do it one day at a time. And that's what I was doing. I did not have the courage to kill myself, but I had the courage to do it slowly, gradually, and in the face of anyone that loved me. And did I care that I would kill you if I drove in my automobile? You are irrelevant to me. You are my problem. You got in the way. Didn't matter to me. Didn't matter to me. Because the life was out, practically. Practically out. I saw a sign on the wall of the hole in the ground, and it said, think, think, think. And I thought, I cannot stay in an organization that requires me to think. Because it is the result of this mind that I am as desperate as I am. This mind that had about 18 people talking to me while I was there in that meeting. All talking. You're an alcoholic. You're not an alcoholic. How could you be like these people? You don't even look like them. They got hair under their arms, out of their chin, big belt. How could you possibly look like these people? You don't look like them. You sound like them. You dress well. You got dressed for a meeting. You couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. Yes, you are an alcoholic. I mean, it's a diagnosis disease. Who cares if you diagnose this? I'd like to get out anyway. I just want to get out. But you got to stay because there's something here. Oh, no, there isn't. What are they saying? I used to look at these lips moving at the podium, you know, at a table there, and these guys would sit up there and Duke and those guys in there. Their lips would move and they'd mumble on the bus. What the hell are they talking about? What the hell are they saying? I try to listen, you know, and I try to listen, and every now and then something would slip in there, like, listen for the similarities, and I would, something similar, me and the maniac that's up there talking. I mean, by the time I got through the judgment, you know, the guy was completely finished his talk, and I would have to go on and say, okay, I'll try for this other one. Listen for the similarities, and, you know, and, I just couldn't get it, and couldn't get it, and couldn't get it, and then one day, I don't know, I was just listening, trying to listen, you know, trying to, like, cut the conversation, and trying to listen, and suddenly I felt something, I felt like, wow, you know, here he was off death row, and out of the latest prison, and looked like he came out of the latest prison, no peace, and this guy was speaking out, I could swear to God, he was blowing me the ear, and, oh, Jesus, so, and I was showering now because I was sober, and my 12-tab into the dry cleaner now, and you know my car no longer rattles and stuff like that. So my life is becoming very manageable quickly. And I thought, what the hell does this man have to say? I got to get out of here. And he just looked up, and I looked at him, and I don't know what happened. But you know what? I knew he was an alcoholic. There's no doubt about it. And I knew I was an alcoholic. And I thought, geez, maybe I can't get out of here as fast as I thought, because you see, I was leaving in a couple of weeks. I was just going to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous until I got my strength back, until I could get back in the saddle, because you see, I was on an alcoholic and the disease of potential, and I had it, you know, and it was killing me. I was dying and almost killing myself one day, and the next day I'm in AA thinking I got to get out of here, because as soon as I pull myself back together, I mean, I'll be better than before, and I'll know what to do, and I'll know what not to do, and I'm learning a lot of tricks here, and God, I never knew about this orange juice thing in this candy bar, and oh, wow, that'll really help the headache. Oh, boy, these big jelly donuts, boy, they would work. Now, I could see how it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon instead of a bottle of Vicks cough syrup. I could probably have a jelly donut in. Because, you see, I had a life that was run by alcohol. I had an alcoholic life. I had a whole series of events that didn't have people, places, and things in them unless they related to alcohol. I didn't have friends that didn't drink. I didn't have an apartment that was conducive to living. I was in a compartment that was conducive to drinking. I was in an alcoholic apartment complex. I mean, you know, they're all over the place, and you can find them. And I don't know now. All these people seem to come in, you know, all right, I'm off, I don't know. But many years ago, I mean, we came in. There was very, very few places to go. You couldn't just park yourself in and out of the hospital. You came in, you shook it out. You shook it out, and you lived in these alcoholic apartment buildings. They were dying, and it didn't matter. And one person went out, woke in the pool. Here, shit, the guy was dead. Didn't make any difference, you know. Get to your booth, and then we'll handle it. And I remember saying to the guy upstairs, quick, I said, Jesus, I think the guy's dead. I mean, if somebody's done something, he's going to say, let's have a drink, and we'll figure out what to do. Now, that's the kind of alcoholic that I was. You know, the kind of alcoholic with that tremendous Irish pride, you know, where I always prided myself, I can get home. And then, you know, one day I lost the car, and I couldn't, and I thought, geez, this is not going to work at all. And then I would get the car, I would get as far as the garage, you know, and I'd park the car, and I'd go, progression of the disease, the progression of the thinking, the progression of the disease. And then I would get to the before the pool, and I would pass out, you know, by the steps. What happened to that guy? He never got to the step part. He, like, stepped into the pool, and none of us heard him because we were too drunk. And he was drunk, and hey, that happened. Didn't matter. And I was like, okay, because we're dead inside. I'm ready to do the dead inside. The only time I felt any energy, excitement, and love, and could fantasize and dream was when I had a bottle of scotch. Without that scotch, I was dead inside. And it reactivated me and made me come alive. And you know, then I would get to the pool. And then one night, one morning, 6 o'clock in the morning, since the sun came out, I would wake up on the doorstep. And I would go in this way back to the doorstep. And then I would wake up half in. And not, and I tell you, that's what it was like. That's what it was like. And then I stopped coming home. But that's okay. Because it was somebody else's fault. It was always somebody else's fault. And that was the progression of my disease. So when I got here, I was the kind of alcoholic that drank anything that was brown. If it wasn't brown, I drank anything that was white. If it was anything that was white, I drank anything at all. It really did not matter. Drugs were not my choice. I did smoke some marijuana and some stuff. I got completely paranoid. I cried like crazy. I thought, the hell needs this? I went right back to drinking. I mean, Jesus, it was a horrible, paranoid-producing situation. So I have no idea what all that drug thing is about. Don't have any understanding. Don't really care one way or the other. If you ever had a glass of alcohol and you did not know what the effect of that drink was going to be, then you and I have something to talk about. I can talk about that. I can address that unpredictability. I can address everything that comes with that package. That's all I know. That's all I know about. So here I was. About to join Alcoholics Anonymous, pouring this glass. I've never had a glass. I drank my scotch in a warm glass, in a normal glass. I've never had a glass of anything with a cherry and toothpick and olive and crap like that in a glass and taking up the space of good alcohol. Never appealed to me. I never put an ice cube in a glass. I never had a cold glass. And you know how slippery those cold glasses are. Never going to take a chance that my scotch would never even... Just in my 20th year of sobriety that I stopped holding a glass with my little finger underneath, you know, my alcoholic dream. You know, you could move around. You could jump over a vehicle and never spill a drop of ice. So it remains. I know it's just not too long. Oh, about 20 years, 5, 6, 8 years ago. That I was no longer using that finger, and I thought, oh my, how about that? Drinking, I drink water like a normal person now. I don't drink it like I have to drink the whole glass. One sitting, and like a sip water. It took about 25 years of sobriety to sip water out of a normal glass. So the interesting thing about my drinking, and I'm sure that you can all relate if you're sitting in this room today, and that is that when I poured that drink, before I poured the drink, when I began to think about having the drink, it began to work for me. You see, I understand the disease of this mind. Nobody goes out and suddenly a big bottle of scotch jumps out of the sky into their arm and flies down their throat. That does not happen. That's nonsense. What happens is you're going to sit here in this meeting and you're going to think your way right out the door. Way before you ever have a drink, you will become drunk. And then you will add alcohol to that mind and you will be gone. And if you're lucky, you'll get back. And maybe you will, and maybe you won't. We don't know that. It annoys me how frivolously we treat it now. When I looked over at the hole in the ground, they said to me, essentially, there's 4 things you have to do. They told me this in the first 24 hours. Now, I've got to tell you, in the first 24 hours, the fact that I could hear it was amazing. But they were patient, and they waited, and they told me in simple statements, and they told me, and they waited for me to like finish. Because you see, when I got here, I was shaking and I was perspiring and I couldn't hold a cup of coffee. Somebody was gracious enough to be kind enough to understand that the sick, suffering alcoholic, they never poured us a full cup of coffee. First of all, they never let us pour our own coffee because the coffee would go all over the floor. So they poured it for us and they poured us a little tiny amount so that when we shook like that, I mean, you could hold on to it. I mean, I don't care how good you are when you're drinking, holding that glass. The minute you get sober, it's gone. Well, what happens to that dexterity? You can just barely make for a little tiny drop of coffee, but I don't know what they make in a coffee these days now, because as a result of the beginning of my sobriety, I had to stop drinking coffee for a number of years, actually. Ripped my stomach right out of my body. But they poured this little kind, it was so thick, you know, as my mother would say about her cup of tea, you could stand a spoon in it, and they would say, now drink this coffee, and it was never too hot, it's never too hot. And they try not to put milk in it when we first got sober because, you know, we were sensitive and we could get sick easily, and they did not appreciate us throwing up on their shoes all the time. So they would pour this little thing of black coffee, and then they would say, now eat these jelly donuts, have as many as you can possibly eat at one sitting. I go to meetings now where they have yogurt and carrot sticks and all this crap, and I think to myself, where is the drunk going to get the sugar needed to survive the first week of sobriety? You know, I don't know how that works now, but I don't particularly care. People are still coming to AA. If they come to my house and they're drunk, they're getting a jelly donut. So I would have my jelly donut, and I would start to shake a little less, and they told me to eat candy bars and all that kind of stuff that you have to do at the beginning. And all of the newcomers and myself in the first couple of years of our sobriety were running around going to doctors with severe hypoglycemia. But you know, it didn't kill us. It didn't kill us. And they also told us that we wouldn't die from lack of sleep. And suddenly, before I knew it, I was swept up and I was no longer leaving in 2 weeks. So if you're sitting out there and you think it's just a matter of time, be careful. I mean, I'm almost 28 years in a couple of weeks. And you know, that can happen to you, and I hope it does. I hope it does. They always say, you know, don't sit before your miracle, not our miracle. We've had it. It's your miracle. You know, claim your own seat. And after the first two meetings, I mean, I sat in the same chair, you know, all the time. And one time somebody sat in my chair, I almost killed them. And I was going out there and I said to Duke, who the hell is in my chair? He said, maybe it's a newcomer. Better be newer than they, or they're out of that chair. So, you know, you claim your place in Alcoholics Anonymous right away. And it's vocabulary of sobriety at the beginning that holds you in good stead for the rest of your sobriety. Because I have gone over all over the world and attended AA meetings, and I can tell you there's always a chair for me. Because I know how to claim my chair in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not afraid to walk where it is safe. Not afraid. The habits begin right away. The first thing they told me is make sure that you put the cap on your toothpaste. What is this, an intellect such as mine, that I have to be sitting here listening to these people telling me to put the cap on my toothpaste? And I couldn't figure it out. And then he said, you know, have you ever known a drunk that did put the cap on their toothpaste? And I went, oh, no, probably not. And that was the beginning. That was the beginning of a habit. A habit. A habit of sobriety. The simplest thing to go home. And you know, to this day, every single solitary day, I put the cap on the toothpaste. And I was in New York City. I was in, I don't know, somewhere in the mid-teens of my sobriety and doing well. And, you know, and the carpet was up at the hotel and we all pound in. And I don't know what it's like in New York City in the morning. It's not like you can just go up and down the street. They're all one way. And I got into the back of the car and I sat there and, oh my God, it happened to me. I realized I had not put the cap on the toothpaste. Can you imagine? I was flipped out. I'm the chairman of a company and I'm flipped out in the back seat of the car. I said to this guy, and you know, I've got people with me in the car, you know, but count on me. And I said, turn the car around. I mean, I don't care how much you pay him. The guy turns around and says, hey, lady, are you crazy? You can't. I said, I don't care what the hell you have to do. Turn this car around. Well, you know, 20 minutes later, he turned it around and we went back and I jumped out of that car and I flew up to that hotel room and sure enough, I had let that cap off the toothpaste. Now, do you think I would have gotten drunk that day? Absolutely not. But I'll tell you this, I would have broken a habit of sobriety. I would have broken a habit that developed into me being one of the most consistent people you're going to meet. I am consistent. I am neat. I am orderly. My house is in order. I will not, under any circumstances and for any reason, ever not put the cap on my toothpaste. It is a habit that has held me in good stead. I will not throw it away now. I will not throw away the things that they told me at the beginning. I will not throw away the things that they told me, such as, always remember, live and let live, easy does it. First things first. But for the grace of God, there go I. Think, think, think. Think through that drink. If you just stop to think for 2 minutes, maybe you'll make the phone call that will save your life. 1,000 slogans right there in the book. Interestingly enough, I think they're after the chapter, the family afterwards, where your theme came from. Live and let live. Probably the greatest attraction to that I have seen evidenced in Alcoholics Anonymous, where I have grown up, where I have seen the good and the bad, the evil and the kind, the compassionate and the hungry. And none of this has caused me to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. None of it. I've suffered incredible things and enjoyed incredible things. I have learned to become excited on the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've learned to believe in miracles. All from habit. The habit of traveling to another country, and before I go, you see, when I drank, I knew where my bottle of scotch was. You see, I had them in the car, in the desk drawer. I had them everywhere. So now when I go somewhere, do you think I don't know where there's a meeting? I have a habit of drunkenness. I have an equal habit of sobriety. I know where there's meetings all over the place. I find out before I go. Maybe I'll go, maybe I won't go. That's up to me. But I know where to go. And my world came crashing in, and I had it more than I thought I could bear. I was able to cross. I don't know what it's like for you. Maybe you're healthier than I am, but it took me 27 years to cry like that. It's a series of little cries. The ones where you first believe, if you cry, you will in fact stop. You will not cry again. And you can just cry for the times that you need to cry. The habit of knowing that it's going to be alright, that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I learned here, that doesn't mean that people will not, and you don't have faith where they can only tell me. But I have never, ever had much respect for what I have been taught by the people that came before me. And, as with Dana, the people that come after me. When I went into the room, they said there's four things now, Lila. First 24 hours of my sobriety. I mean, I've had people say, you can't get too heavy with the God stuff, blah, 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 blah. You know, the little newcomers might scare them. I don't give a damn. You see, my job here, and believe me, over the years, I've not always done it this way. But my job at this podium is to share my experience. Mine. Not what you think it should be. What it is. For me. I'm not really interested in it. In fact, please don't debate anything with me after the meeting. I don't care. That's why you have sponsors. So that's what I will do. It says in the big book that we do not, you know, we do not apologize for our God. I don't apologize for my God, nor do I apologize for myself, who I am, my life. I was listening to Jack McNallan speak at the Thursday Friendship meeting just a couple of weeks ago. And he said, for the first 40 years over, isn't it? And he said, for the first 20-something years of his sobriety, he said, who am I and where am I going? And he let you and the world determine that for him. And now he says, I know who I am, and I know where I'm going. And I can add to that, when I don't know that, I know where to go to find out. I can call my friends. I can call the people. They can talk to me in the language of the heart, and they will remind me, yes, Lila, this is who you are, and this is where you're going. And I will say, oh, yes, thank you for bringing me back to the great reality deep within. Because the great reality for me is it has taken me a long time. And if I'm really lucky, it will take me the rest of my life. But I am falling in love with me. The more I love me, the more I'm inclined to want to love you. Some of you, I could not do that right now. You're still, I'm not interested. I will save your life, but I don't have to like you. I have been trained to save your life. It is a habit. I don't know how not to do it. But if you're going to hurt me, get out of my way. It's an interesting thing when you determine the difference between selfishness and giving. All through our book, it talks about receiving, 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 receiving. And yet I hear so many people at these podiums talk about giving and giving and giving and giving. And yet, do they talk about God? Do they talk about the steps? Do they talk about how to do that? No. And when I was 20-something years sober, I thought, what are you doing? You're telling these stories that everybody wants to hear. For Christ's sake, they drank their beer. Do they want to really hear that? Maybe they'd like to hear about how you found your God. Do I care what kind of God you have? Absolutely no interest. Why? My experience has been that I've gone through a ton of them since I've been sober. My God still is so vast and so big now must redefine itself. Does it matter to me that you have a Christian God or a non-Christian God? I don't care. What matters is that we pray. What matters is that we share the journey. What matters is that you respect my position and I respect yours. If I have one thing that's begun to bother me, it's that we say the Lord's Prayer. Now why should that bother me? Because it's got nothing to do with Alcoholics Anonymous, for one. Because the prayer of AA is a serenity prayer, for two. Because we are now in 174 countries. And there's a whole world out there called the Middle East that needs us badly. And it says on the page that you got this, that we are non-denominational. And I am afraid of any limitation, be it even Christian. So when you say the Serenity Prayer, I mean the Lord's Prayer, I am beginning to say it is a wonderful and beautiful habit of Alcoholics Anonymous to do so. But I will say the Serenity Prayer, because nowhere in the literature have I read anything about the Lord's Prayer. But I respect the kindness and the gentleness and the compassion of the people that didn't know how to end their meeting when there was no way to have a meeting in no format. I thought, well, that's what we will do. But you see, we're a big organization now. We're all over the world. There are lots of God. There are lots of God. When I got up yesterday morning, it was early, and when we came back to the coffee, I saw two women place a blanket on the beach and put out all their food. They were talking more. And we were looking at them. I thought, oh, well, not really funny, but... And then we saw the ice bucket. And then they toasted each other with this toast. And I said, you know, I don't think that's horseshoes. And sure enough, 8 o'clock in the morning. Now, a couple of hours later, they polished off that bottle. And I knew that it was alcohol. You can tell by the color. Well, you can tell. We're experienced with this. Corks, I think. And I thought, I wonder if they have any idea that 300 or 400 members of Alcoholics Anonymous that are watching them drink this bottle. It was really interesting. And when I got up this morning, I felt a little not so strong again. Then lots of things were happening, and I did what I do, the habit I have. You see, when I have a physical problem and an emotional problem, I know that if I address my spiritual problems, they will be taken care of. Ruth has said to me, Ruth King has said to me 1,000 times, go to the same meeting for all those years. She said to me, there are no problems left. Every problem is a spiritual problem. Thus, every solution is a spiritual solution. Ah, simplicity. Why? So I did what I do, and I've been doing it all weekend. I opened up that little 12 and 12, and I opened up the big before. You have the physical strength. If you get there, you can stand up. It will be all right. And I thought, I have nothing to give. All the times I have spoken, I have thought, oh, I have nothing to give. But today I felt empty. I mean, I completely felt empty. I thought, what can I possibly share? And I heard it. Who you are like. Your experience. You've been sober almost whatever number of years. You got up. You're capable of crying. You're capable of laughing. You're a charming Irish woman. You're a powerful, sober person. Share that. That's a lot from someone that was wrapped around a toilet seat 27 plus years ago. Unable to pray, hating God. Grabbing that sink and reaching up and coming out of a blackout saying, God, help me. And enraged that I would have prayed, enraged that I would have prayed to this God. But you see, it doesn't matter. Because in a state of semi-unconsciousness, my prayers were answered. And within a really remarkable story, which I don't have time for, but with a remarkable way, I ended up at the hole in the ground in Huntington Park, where they told me the four things that I still have not told you, in case you're wondering what they were. And they told me within the first 24 hours. I suggest you stay. Because I have never needed anything else. They said, number one, you cannot drink again for the rest of your life. How can you say such a thing to these wimbling, trembling little newcomers? I mean, all they can do is a day at a time. How you do it is a day at a time. However, You cannot drink again for the rest of your life. If you do not have that in your mind, and you do not understand that and believe that about yourself, then you have a reservation. And you cannot have any reservations whatsoever, or don't even bother to talk about or work this program. And that's what it means, wherever the steps are, that you are powerless over alcohol, for you will never have that power back. I don't care who dies, lives, or what devastation shall befall you. You can never drink again for the rest of your life if you're an alcoholic. Now, maybe you'll stop going to meetings and convince yourself you're not. But if you're here, that's the truth. That is my experience. They told me that, and my mind was saying, that's very nice. I'm out of here in 10 days. The number two thing is that I have to go to meetings for the rest of my life. I thought, I cannot believe they are saying that to me. I am only in this meeting now because I'm afraid I'm going to drink. I may not even be an alcoholic. Oh, sure, all social drinkers come to AA, stay going to meetings because they're afraid they might drink, you know, show up at 8 o'clock every night, do all the stuff they're supposed to do because they're afraid they might have a drink. For the rest of my life. I said, why do I have to do that? Don't you get it? I mean, can't you, like, graduate? He said, oh, no, he said. He said, you have a 24-hour memory. I understood that. He said, you'll forget. Of alcohol, the spirit of that disease, the spirit of the mind of the alcoholic, the language of the booze is so powerful that it will begin to talk to you. And unless you're in front of us, you will hear it. But you see, if you go to meetings for the rest of your life, in front of that voice will be the love and the care and the language of the heart of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you won't hear that calling. So I cannot drink again for the rest of my life because I have a terminal disease. And I have to go to meetings again for the rest of my life. And that's a lot of stuff. And then they said, now you have to clean house. I'd already cleaned my house with a toothbrush. And they explained inside. And they explained all the ramifications of that. And if you're new, don't worry about that now. Get yourself a sponsor and they will tell you what that means. And you will begin to sweep away the pain and the secrets and the isolation and the desperation and the loneliness and the sadness. And this won't go away forever. Why, it will come in layers. And it will delve in, it will go deeper. And you can have from Sunday to Sunday. But by the time you have your Sunday to Sunday, you will have believed in miracles. And you will know that the hope will never diminish. And that there will be somebody there to carry you from Sunday to Sunday. And they said, you have to clean house for the rest of your life. Little did I know that I was welcome to that. That whenever I am troubled and whenever a lot happens as a child, I must put all of that in front of me and look at, where am I? What do I have to do? I said, you know, it's such a cathartic experience. I'm closing the door on my life. And I knew then that it was a huge spiritual experience. And her Celtic Irish humor, she said to me all life, it is not a spiritual experience. This is a nightmare. A nightmare. But you see, when you're sober and you know how to play in the sandbox of AA, you just hide in the corner. The nightmares pass, you know? Somebody will throw hands on you and get angry with them. That'll take a little edge off. Somebody will be nice and whatever. I love to clean house now. I love to look at my part of it because my job is to do the fourth thing. So the first thing is that I cannot drink for the rest of my life. The second is that I must attend meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for the rest of my life. The third is that I must clean house for the rest of my life. The steps, of course, tell me how to do that. And the fourth thing is that I must make room for God. I must find God and I must make room for God for the rest of my life. Little did I know that it would become the peace of my life, my search, my quest, my question about my God. Little did I know that I would spend all of my sobriety and, God willing, all of my remaining sober years, because you see, I do not intend to drink for the rest of my life. How can I make such a statement? Because I intend to go to meetings for the rest of my life. Because my spiritual condition is the first thing I address in the morning and the last thing I address at night. And between there, just in case I have a problem, why, I have the habits of sobriety. I have those phone numbers, and I know where to sit, and I have my seat, and I know those newcomers, and I can read that book, and I can be healed. I am protected. I am safer within the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. I get more power from the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous and the God that protects me in order to be here than I ever did from the spirit of Scotch. It took me a long time before the Spirit of God and the Spirit of Scotch matched each other. But if you want to stay sober and have a peaceful, serene life and have a God and understand that greatest reality deep within, then you will someday have a God that's bigger than the booze you drank. And you will not be afraid again. And you will believe in miracles and you will expect them. Why shouldn't you? It was many years before I knew how to work the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the orders that they were in. 1 through 12. There was nothing wrong with all my efforts and my exercises before. All that did was make me ready to have the experience of practicing my program, mine, not yours. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me the tools. How I use them is my experience. Today, if something goes wrong with me, I will say that I am powerless over whatever it is. Sometimes it's big. Sometimes it's as small as envy. Sometimes it's little. Sometimes it's big. Sometimes it's a shoelace. Sometimes it's an elephant. Whatever it is, when I found out that I could be powerless over the smallest, insignificant things, I'm powerless over everything. I spent maybe 18 years of my sobriety without being powerless. And I created all the things you need in life to make yourself safe. And I have those things. You don't have to be a missionary in China to be spiritual, believe me. And I wondered why I was dark. But you see, I needed to do that to find out. It wasn't enough. Thank God I stayed sober long enough to find out. It wasn't enough. And that I had not been making room for God, I had been making room for Lila. Now, I used God along the way because the steps are a great band-aid for all of us, aren't they not? Now, I am powerless over everything. I live in the question of life, nothing. I created answers for all those years. Good answers. It terrifies me now that I might have an answer. In fact, if I give you an answer, I can guarantee you my life is unmanageable at that precise moment that I'm giving it to you. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Throughout the literature, throughout the big book, and throughout the 12 and 12, it stopped talking about the disease of alcoholism right away. It talks about living, how to live. But if God could relieve you of the disease of alcoholism, could take away this obsession that drove you for all those years, then perhaps it could work on other problems in your life. Perhaps it could. Perhaps it will. My experience is, it does. If you make room. It says clearly, in the sixth step in the 12 and 12, you have to cooperate with God. Now, I think you're given a reprieve in the first few years. I think you can get to do anything you bloody well want to. You can do anything you want as long as you have somebody, and they'll tell you what to do. And you do exactly what they tell you. You don't even have to question it, because they're giving you the love that they were given, and it doesn't really matter. And they'll tell you what to do, and it's a lot of people that like to tell you what to do, so you won't have a problem finding somebody. There's no reason for it. There's a ton of them, believe me. They'll tell you what to do. And that's a great and gracious thing that there are people such as that, because I am not one of them, but I was. Believe me. They call them little Nazi people, and I was one of those, you know. Bam, bam, bam. All the stuff I would never have done, I have told people to do. But I kind of grew out of that now. But there's a lot of people there that said, will tell you what to do, and you have to do it, because they will keep you sober until you can find through the steps. They'll walk you through, God willing. If there's somebody you're working with and they haven't mentioned the steps, go find somebody else. If there's somebody that you're working with and they haven't talked about God, please find somebody else. Doesn't matter. It'll all work out anyway, but you might save yourself a little bit of time. God. If you're not talking about God, you've missed the very basic bottom line of the entire program, which is, this is a spiritual program. Woo! I know a ton of people, by the way, that don't talk about God, and they have all their opinions about going to read the black stuff. I don't understand that crap about the black stuff. I read this, and it means whatever I mean, need this to mean that day. That is my experience today, based on where I am today. How I look at the stuff today, I can assure you it's different than last week, a year ago, and certainly in my first 2 years. So in the first year, I think you should do whatever somebody tells you to do. They'll tell you the right thing. They cannot make a mistake. You are covered under the grace of the God of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that grace of God will protect you in your first 2 years. Don't worry about it. All you have to do is not drink, go to meetings, make some effort to do what they tell you to do, and know that you're looking for a God that's bigger than your scotch. That's it. You'll be all right. I understand the 10 makes people play golf. I thought that was so intelligent of him. My God, I thought, that is great. You know, maybe I could get him on the tennis court, and at least I'd get something out of the thing, too. You know, you learn from somebody every day. Every day. In all seriousness, I now say I admit that I am powerless over alcohol. I am powerless over any event in my life that I feel that I am not doing in conjunction with God. If I am alone in that adventure and have forgotten my God, I can assure you I will be rendered powerless. My life will be unmanageable. You know, you get the 50 cages along to your shoulders. You don't look like you have unmanageable lives. It just grabs your heart and makes you feel like you're going to have a heart attack. There's nothing invisible, really. You know, your leg won't move, but that's okay. Sophisticated, subtle unmanageability. You pay your bills. Oh, but you worry about the hurricane that'll wipe your beach house right off the bloody sand that hasn't even come. That's unmanageability. Anything out of the moment, any judgment or any worry for me is unmanageability. And I am powerless over it all, and it can happen in a minute. Do you know how many times, even this weekend, I've looked at a couple of people and I thought, you've got lots of look in their eyes, there's a hostility there. I am powerless over that. For a split second, I was unmanageable. I was about to say something to them or give them a dirty look. I don't even know who the hell they are. Maybe they were distracted with their own crap. How do I know? I didn't like the way they looked at me. I'm 20-something years sober. Good thing I'm human. Good thing I have the habit of sobriety. Good thing I know that I'm powerless over all of it. Good thing I know that on the days when my fear is big, when so much has happened to me that I'm out of balance and a little bit tired, that I don't have to react. Because I am powerless. Now, you know, it's no surprise that the first step is the step of honesty. They say that the principle that exhibits itself in the first step is the step of honesty. It takes a very honest human being to admit that they're an alcoholic and that they cannot drink again for the rest of their life. It takes a very honest human being to say, of myself, I am not. But if I have my God, together we can do it. It is a misconception if you think for 1 minute that God is going to do it all for you. Only in this grace period of the beginning of your sobriety, but as soon as you hit that sixth step, you better start cooperating in a really big way. They talk about God's will and your will and just will and this will and don't do anything and blah, blah, blah. Fine. In your little grace period, do whatever you want. Just don't drink. However, the day will come when you will realize that your own will is what keeps you sober. You will realize that it is your will that brings you into the meeting. You will realize that it is your will that has come to believe and helps you come to believe that a power greater than yourself will restore your sanity. You will realize that it is your will that sits you in that chair. It is your will that makes you go and be a volunteer. It is your will that puts the coffee out. It is your will that puts out your hand. It is not God coming out of the sign saying stick out your hand. It is your trained, habitual will of sobriety. It's the most powerful God-given gift we have been given. That and the gift of retrospect where I can look back and see myself on the bathroom floor and see myself today and say, oh my Lord, of myself I am nothing. You carried me until I could find a God that was comfortable for me. And when I discarded those gods over the years of my sobriety, you carried me again. And when I argued about those gods, you carried me. And when I said, look at all these words in the book, and I got over that bullshit, you carried me then too. And when I wanted to change everything, you said, oh, fine, go right ahead. You know, nothing changes in Alcoholics Anonymous. It hasn't changed in 60-something years. It's not going to change in my lifetime. Have a good time at the meetings because nothing's really going to change. There's all these people who think they can affect change and their egos perceive them, but let me tell you, ultimately, I don't care what your home group is, who your sponsor is, or who they are. At 3 o'clock in the morning, you will meet a God. Out and find someone on Alcoholics Anonymous that will lead you there, that will carry you while you're looking for that God. So when you discard your God and don't have one, they will say, I will take care of you and I will tell you what to do until you find that God. This is how you find that God. You get everything out of the way. How do I do that? Well, you admit that you are powerless over this person, place, thing, power, money, property, prestige, one by one, I've had to be powerless over all of them. Did it happen in the suite? No, it happened over a 27-year plus period of time, and it will happen, for God willing, another 40 of them, because it's going to be always ongoing. I was powerless over 6 huge events from Sunday to Sunday. I needed help. They made me unmanageable. I could not take it. But I have come to believe that I will be restored to walk, to balance. That eventually I will get enough sleep and I rested this weekend. That eventually I will be able to eat food again comfortably and I walk. That I will become physically well, that I will get an emotional basket of serenity, and that I will be spiritually back, and that great reality will come through me, and I will feel the language of the spirit of the universe, the words in the book that have so comforted me. And this creative intelligence will speak through you to me, through Dana, through a smile, through Judy walking in, to Phil and Melinda, to SK and April, to all of these people, to Eve, Teresa, and the gentleness of a smile, the kindness of a man's eyes, to a baby kicking around on the floor during one of the meetings, with the love and the energy of the angels. Was I healed by that baby? I was directly in the light of God. How could I not have been healed? That baby has not taken Israel yet, and terrified itself. It will. Pretty alcoholic family there. We might see that baby. But there's a very good chance we won't. I have come to believe that coming to meetings, reaching out, making the phone call, getting over myself, putting God first, making room for God, that I will be restored to a sense of balance. Balance is all I care about now. If I'm out of balance, I can very easily go insane. I have two choices after the second step. It is no surprise that it's me, it is a step of hope, the step of hope. You've got to always have that hope. Without that hope, you will not stay sober. You were given doses of that hope. In the first 2 years, you lived on hope. You lived on nothing else but hope. Christ almost died in the coffee and the cigarettes and the donuts, but you could live on the hope. And you lived on the hope. And if you didn't have hope, you ran into another newcomer, and that's what we give each other. We give each other hope. And then you come to believe that you can have it too. And then you come to believe to know that you have it. And then you give it away, and you give it away. And that can happen within 24 hours. But you're given a big choice, and once you get to understand these steps, you see there's a responsibility then. You can no longer walk away and blame anybody else. Because if you want to stay in that position of sanity, if you want to stay balanced, you have to make a decision. You can make a decision, not make a decision, you can start raving mad, and eventually get back to it if you don't drink. Or you can make a decision right away. You go to the third step. Step of faith, and you can make a decision to turn your will and your life over to the care of God. As you understand that, God doesn't matter. If you don't have one, use somebody else's. First year, I had a huge angel, giant wings, I mean, major range of wings. The Roman Catholics, my own angel that I went to school with. Worked for me. I mean, I wasn't telling everybody, gee, I had a 6-foot angel, stay away from me. But I'll tell you, I had one. You know, a few years later, I had to, dismiss a lot of the, I still keep St. Anthony, I lose things every now and then. And I'll use anybody I need to. And now what's my God? This God as I understand this God. All of us. Jesus, Mary, Joseph, Muhammad, all of us. Everybody. My brother, my nephew just went away. All of those people are there for me. That's a very big amount of information. All of them. That's a lot to turn your care over to. I am safe then. And it doesn't require that I do anything else in the third step. Just make the decision to turn it over. Turn it over. You know, at the beginning, we used to walk around turning over major things, minor things, all kinds of things. Turn it over. Never knew who the hell caught it. But we turned it over. Great belief. Great faith. Only when I was about 5 or 6 years sober did I begin to question that. Then I spent the next 10 years questioning That worked. Questioning my own faith. Fine, no problem. It led me to a great valley of hope. But that's life. And then the great step of courage, the fourth step. Admitted to God. I mean, that's God. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory. Oh my God, the books, the ways, the things. Take a yellow tablet, write it down. Your thickest, your secrets, your first inventory will be your grave. You won't remember a word of it when you're 20 years older. If you do, you have shouldn't. Stuck in the past. Just take that pad and write like mad. Get it all out. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. It's an effort. It's an honest, open willingness to try. That's all we care about. Believe me, over the years, you, if you stay sober and have any time at all on AA, you will be presented with so many character defects, selfish, self-seeking, inconsiderate, and dishonesty. And examples of that, you know, who would think of dishonesty is to steal someone's time? Who would think of inconsideration of being disrespectful and turning your back? I mean, you will go from the big, huge, giant defects of character into what the book calls these little minor things that are the offshoots in it that people get drunk over. So yes, you will have plenty of time with the right people to work through this step. Take your time. But at the beginning, as soon as you can, write out those secrets, write out those things, get it out of your way, make room for God, make room for God in the smallest way, and God will meet you 3,000-fold. That's what happens. That's what happens. And you take this little piece of paper and you find somebody and you break down the wall of isolation, the great, great, great killer of alcoholics, the loneliness and isolation, the killer of alcoholics who are sober. Don't just welcome the newcomer. Welcome us. Welcome the old timers. Because you see, we die sober sometimes, and we're in pain. Stick out your hand to the guy that's there a long time, still showing up taking their seat. I'm glad there's newcomers, but you know what? This is life. There'll always be newcomers. There better be old timers, or I'm in deep trouble. I have to know someone's in front of me. I have to call Chris on the phone. And do we talk about the problems? No, we talk about God. We talk about how grateful we are to feel. We talk about our soul. We talk about how it feels. Because we have made room for that kind of conversation. So I am powerless, and I get the power back in the second step, and I make the decision to ask my God for help. And my God says, fine, I will help you make room for me. And I make room in the fourth step. And then so that when I can go back to my God and not to go with 16 volumes of nonsense, I talk to another member of AA who said, this is precisely your problem. And I go to God and I say, this is precisely my problem. I am entirely ready. How do I know now as my experience that I am entirely ready? Because I accept myself. I say, Lila, you did it again. This is who you are. It's okay. I have come to understand. I accept myself. The minute I have accepted myself, the humility of the seventh step comes rushing in like a raging water. I cannot tell you. And immediately I feel the power of God. And immediately I know, because well, I have opened the doors to that God by accepting myself. I accepted that I was an alcoholic in a drunken, unconscious state. Why do I have such a hard time accepting myself when I'm just a giant asshole? It's awfully hard for me to reconcile that. But when I can do that, and those defects have been raging, and I say, yes, they're still there, I accept it. It's okay. Help me. Help me to do what? Well, you know, over the years, I've had a year where I say, help me to not be afraid. Help me to feel that I am enough. This year, I have chosen to say, help me to pause and believe that I will be protected. Be careful what you ask for, because you will be given the experience that will solidify every organ in your body until you are given that gift of prayer. The meditation is the answer. The prayer is the question. So I go to God and I say, this is exactly what I did wrong, because I talked to these people and this is it, and will you help me? And then God says, yes, of course I will, Lila. And I feel at peace. However, was there anybody in the way while you were acting insane out there? And 8 and 9 come into view where I have to make an amends and address myself. Sometimes it's just amending my own thinking. Sometimes I have to talk to somebody. Sometimes I don't. And I say, was there anybody in the way while I today in my sober life wreaked havoc? And in such case, I amend that. And then I'm back to the staying sober one day at a time step. I'm back to 10. And I continue to take personal inventory and stop myself. Because I'm well enough to do that now, you see. I was powerless over the incident. I've been given back the power in 2. I made the decision to hold on to that power. I cleared the way. I worked with an alcoholic to ensure I was being honest with myself. I said, God, this is what I have done. Will you help me? I have cleared the path and apologized or amended my behavior, and now I am back to 10. Here I am today. Will you help me today? And God, of course, my God. Just take a breath, Lila, and you will know I am there. Because now that you're well again, you can breathe. And when you breathe, I am your breath. And I can pray, and I can meditate. And how do I pray? Why, I get up in the morning, and I'm just grateful to be alive. And I say something. And during the day, I catch myself, and I just address it. That is night, the great night, when the spiritual universe is at its busiest, I think, and I go to sleep. I write, Dear Great Spirit, it is September, whatever it is, 12th, 1997. These are my questions. What do I do about my mother? What do I do about the resurrected pain of my brother? What do I do about Jerry's surgery? What do I do about Matthew's cancer? What do I do about Tony's death? What do I do about this? What do I do about that? How do I handle this? What do I do about the fact that I let the dresser outside? Do I talk to them? Should I? What, when, where, how, and why? Thank you for my sobriety. Help me to maintain it. I need and love you, Lila. I take that piece of paper and I throw it in the trash. And I sleep like a baby most of the time. Sometimes around 4 o'clock in the morning, I take it all back. But that's okay. I have the habit of recovery and the habit of sobriety. I can write it all and do it again. And you know, many times, through you, through the newspaper, through a person, through a phone call, through life, through breathing in and out, through showing up and doing the next indicated thing, because I am a sober person that is in the habit of doing such, I will get the answer. Somebody will come right away and say, oh yes, Jerry's back is fine. Matthew's whatever. Your mother's now on path. The house will be different when you see it the next time. All the answers will be present. Dana will give me a basket. It will delight me. Do you understand? I have asked, and I receive. I have made room for God. Little did I know in making room for God that I would receive so much. And then it says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of what? Of the process. The process of admitting that I am powerless, that it has made me unmanageable, that I want that power back, that I would like to be restored to balance, making a decision that that is more important to me than anything else, getting rid of what is in the way and looking at that, asking another person if I have been as honest as I possibly can be, saying, God, this is what I have found out. Will you help me? My sponsor can't help me on 7, honey. It's got to be God. Who's in the way? Have I hurt them? I'm back to the walking around step. I'm current. What do I need to do now? What questions do I have left about what disturbs my day, my day? Make room for the answer. I have had a spiritual awakening. I don't know about you, but I can do this step in about 2.5 seconds anytime I want to during the day. I can activate this spiritual awakening. I did before I got up to this podium. I was powerful for all of you. I had to remind myself of that. I had to ask for that power. I had to make a decision that whatever it was, I was a channel for God, and this was my job. This is my job, because I made a commitment to have it as sobriety that I would do this. I had to look at my own little crap that was in the way so that I wouldn't give a hostile talk. I'm capable of it. I had some good friends that I was able to talk to so they could keep me comforted until I got up here. I accepted myself within a short order of being up here as being so different and so much more than when I was on the bathroom floor. And the minute I did that, I could feel it. I could feel that energy come in me. I could reach out and practically sense the tangibility of who's around me. I don't know if you can see them, but they're there. I am surrounded by God. I am surrounded by those that have gone on. I am surrounded by my brother and my nephew and all of them. Why, I even have Jane's grandmother show up every now and then. I need all the Irish people I can get. If that's your belief, doesn't matter. Will it be my belief on Monday morning? Don't know. I haven't lived today yet. It's only halfway through. Is that a spiritual awakening? To be aware that you have a whole day. If I can do a lifetime from Sunday to Sunday, I can sure do it Sunday afternoon. That is a spiritual awakening. That you are sitting here at an AA convention, dressed up in the stuff from the 60s that you were last night. I must say, if I were to give prizes, the men would win hands down. They were great. They were great with the fest and the whole thing. It was fantastic. I sat out there and enjoyed everybody. Everyone. That is a spiritual awakening. Being able to breathe is a spiritual awakening. Being able to take the book and say, heal me, is a spiritual awakening. Having Dana give me a bath, is on the raft, is a spiritual awakening. Being alive, being breathing, is a spiritual awakening. Sitting in your chair this morning is the most profound miracle you're going to have your whole life. And you haven't even finished the day. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what's in store for you? If you want to share your experience, strength, and hope, then you will be given experience, strength, and hope to share in the program Thou Cause Anonymous. And in that experience, you will be given everything that life has to offer. And if you don't drink, and you go to meetings, and you clean house, and you make room for God, you will never be given more than you can handle. The grace of God will never take you, and the grace of God will not keep you. It is a promise. So it is my job to carry this message to alcoholics. What message is that? My message. My message. That I'm still here. That I'm still trying. That I'm still looking. That I still expect more. That I'm grateful to be alive. That I could cry. That I could be so grateful that I can't even imagine how full my life is. That I'm less afraid now than I was when I started. Not of you. Of living. My message. But the only way I know to live now is through the steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That for the years that I had these habits of sobriety, where I had my seat and I went to meetings really regularly and I read the book and I reached out and I talked to people on the phone and I did all those things. All those things. I now have to have practice. Practice is a step for me. I know what the steps, how you work the steps. I practice them. I practice them. I practice them. All the time. I'll be practicing them for the rest of my life. That is my message. My message is if you find yourself a sponsor and someone to talk to and another little buddy along the way discuss within a reasonable period of time of your sobriety so you can struggle through this together, start working on those steps. Start working on them right now. There's no way to do them wrong. You can't do them wrong. It's absolutely impossible. So it doesn't really matter. Don't look for some star in Alcoholics Anonymous to help you through. The chances are that you suffer sad. Look for a regular, hard-working guy. Look for a woman. Look for someone who's going to meetings. Look for the regular Joe sitting next to you. I can tell you right now that if you reach your hand to the person next to you, they can take you through the steps. It is not a big, huge intellectual experience. It is a willingness to admit that you're powerless. A hope that God will come in and give you more. A decision to work with that God. A willingness to take an inventory and work it out with somebody else. Accept who you are and stop living in the misery of your life and in the love and the care and the gentleness that Alcoholics Anonymous gives you. Give up this misery crown. Right after it says pain is a touchstone of all humility, later on it says you do not have to be in pain in order to have a full life. You do not have to have these miserable things. You can only stay as long as you want to. The steps will take you out of your pain. It will take you into compassion. It will take you out of your hurt and it will take you into gratitude. It will take you from not having God and lead you directly into the arms of God. It will take you from feeling alone and make you feel like you have one other person. And that one other person in Alcoholics Anonymous will become two other people, three other people, and you'll never be alone again. Thank you.